Okay, what we've done so far is show how a lot of the field trials are being used. They're being used to estimate regional yields. Those are being used to estimate, again, what is available now, what's available in the future based on economic modeling, geographic modeling. What I'd like to do now is switch gears and have people talk about actual field trials that are going on. And in this next grouping, we'll have Don Tyler, who will talk about switchgrass fields that he's been working on, Doug Carlin on corn stover, and Craig Daughtry, who will be looking at the estimated residue cover using remote sensing. Our next speaker is Don Tyler from University of Tennessee, and we'll be talking about switchgrass management.
Using the mouse here.
Yeah.
So
click here.
Are we using the arrows to move with the mouse?
Use the arrows there, and then I would just use that to move.
Switchgrass is not a new crop. Appreciate that tool making a pretty big distinction between the lowland ecotypes that we can grow in the southeast and the upland ecotypes that are more suitable for the north of the USA. Switchgrass has been grown as a forage crop in the Midwest for probably 50 years or more. It's been studied extensively by the Department of Energy, the National Labs, Auburn University, number of locations for the last 20, 25 years. We received in 2004 a grant from DOE to stimulate bioenergy in Tennessee as a crop production system. That money came in, and I got a call or an email saying, would I help with the switchgrass project? And I said, yes. I'd never seen switchgrass before. I was a novice. We made a trip to Auburn, Alabama to look at the work they had done. We tried to build on all the work that came out of VPI, the FIAC published work, trying to build on things to not repeat all the stuff that had been previously done with switchgrass as a bioenergy crop. The work I'm going to be talking about was done here at the Milan Research and Education Center. Later on, I'm going to be talking about the pilot biorefinery plant that's going in East Tennessee, close to Oak Ridge National Lab and the University of Tennessee. You can read the first comment. There is a thrust for cellulosic production, as everyone knows. We did not have efficient production strategies in Tennessee for switchgrass production. It was a fairly new crop. We had had previous work done in Tennessee, published by FIAC, but we didn't have any particular production strategies. And surprisingly, particular production strategies were not necessarily available for any particular location in the original FIAC study. Many of you know all of these things. Al Toole mentioned many of these things. I think this is very important. Switchgrass is planted with seed. We're using a regular drill, no-till drill. And we're also not having to use any specialized planting or harvesting equipment to establish switchgrass. And these are, I would say, limitations, at least for an initial upscaling for a bioenergy refinery. Problems with the miscanthus, because you've got to vegetatively propagate it, and right now it would require us to have specialized harvesting equipment. This whole symposium is dealing, of course, with these issues of the other species, biomass sources. Research in progress in Tennessee. Quickly, I'm going to be talking mostly about soil landscape suitability, seed and nitrogen rate interaction study, very briefly about a cultivar selection study, a little bit of a bale storage study that we're doing. The on-farm demonstrations in 2004, we planted 32 acres, if I may speak in English units right now, 32 acres on the Milan Research and Education Center that was the switchgrass research that was superimposed on. In 2005, in the western part of Tennessee, we went to farmers' fields on 100 acres. This was contracted with farmers under the project for more experience on-farm with switchgrass production in Tennessee. We also have a carbon sequestration study going on with three national labs that Tris is involved in. Switchgrass, the first year, this is first establishment year. We chose in the West Tennessee area four different soil types and slope conditions to look at switchgrass productivity. These represented for that part of Tennessee most of the upland and some of the floodplain areas in terms of the general soil types. Grenada silt loam, frangipane soils, moderately well-drained level, a moderately well-drained floodplain, a moderately to somewhat poorly drained sloping upland that had considerably more erosion initially, but a Grenada silt loam. We also chose a poorly drained floodplain, and we went into this area to put the seeding rate nitrogen study, interaction study, and the cultivar study. We didn't realize it had severe weed problems. It had severe broadleaf signal grass and severe crabgrass. And these were very difficult. We had no EPA labeled approved compounds to control these grasses at the time. But it was really a good learning experience because we encountered the same thing the next year on some of the 100 acres on farmers' fields in terms of maintaining a switchgrass plant population to the second year in the presence of very heavy weed infestation. Keep that in mind. Anytime you see PDFP or poorly drained, we were dealing with initially very difficult establishment conditions. We are using the lowland types. We had plenty of information from the previous work that the lowland types would be what we would grow. There can be much higher yielding than the uplands in some cases. We only had about two of those available at the time. Alamo and Canlow, the upland types, there are many of those. They're more winter hardy, which we don't need in our area in Tennessee. But again, we only had really two lowland types. All of the information we had said there was no point in recomparing those, so we just chose Alamo, more commonly available seed, to use for most of our work. We had a very unique opportunity. We had, at the time, in 2004, and these are the third year establishment yields. This issue's already come up, and it's very important. For us, our data would indicate that in the year we plant, we make about one quarter of the yield. The second year, we make about half the yield, and by the third year, we usually have established switchgrass. And we are harvesting switchgrass in terms of the biorefinery each year from the first year on. But we had a unique opportunity. Dr. Joe Boughton, who was at that time at the University of Georgia, gave us two of his synthetic selections to compare to Alamo that we planted in 2004. And Charles Taliaferro at Oklahoma State gave us a synthetic. And they chose these specifically for our area from their breeding programs. We have compared those. No significant difference on three of the locations between the synthetics and Alamo. But again, in the established year on the bottomland poorly drained site, we had all of the initial competition from weeds and poor stand that we were trying to maintain the second year. All three synthetics were more vigorous, in some cases higher yielding by that point than the Alamo. We now have, of course, the 2007 and 2008 yields for this. I'm going to spend a little more time on the seeding nitrogen rate study. 2004, we planted switchgrass at those seeding rates. It's quite surprising that seeding rate, in many cases in published data, is not even mentioned what it was. In many cases, it was very low seeding rates. We did a wide range of seeding rates. Then in 2005, we came across the seeding rates and put across those nitrogen rates as a strip plot design over those seeding rates. So we have an interaction study between seeding rate initially in 2004 and then nitrogen application in 2005. The previous data indicated that nitrogen, it was not probably needed the first year because of low yields to begin with, the establishment year. Plus, if you do have any weed competition, you're fertilizing the weeds with nitrogen. So we are not putting nitrogen on in the spring of the first season. We're starting that application in the second season. We are using the Alamo variety. We're planting with the regular no-till drill. No-tillage is the way we grow annual crops in Tennessee. 70% most of our annual crops are no-till, and no-till drilling winter wheat in as a rotational crop with soybeans is commonly done. So most of our switchgrass is being planted no-till in Tennessee. The statistical procedures for this being a strip plot design, the way we put it in, are a little bit complicated. The procedures are described for the first 3 years' results in this article. I'm not going to go through any of the details. In the second 3 years, 6, 7, and 8, and this paper deals with 4, 5, and 6, we rarely saw a seeding rate as being significant in that test. There usually were no seeding rate, nitrogen rate interactions across those four different locations. So I'm going to deal mainly in the next three slides with LS means using these predictive procedures that are described in this thing for mainly the nitrogen rate and the year effect. This is the well-drained floodplain compared to the poorly drained floodplain. Notice no response above 67 kilograms per hectare on the well-drained floodplain across the 3 years after establishment. Poorly drained floodplain, much different. That's where we had the very severe competition again with grasses, the extra nitrogen stimulating additional tillering each year where the switchgrass clumps are spreading, getting larger. So we are getting much more response all the way up to 202. At least statistically. The economics are a whole different issue here. Probably on the poorly drained, you also had probably clearly some denitrification problems, other things in terms of nitrogen response, but quite a different response to nitrogen on those two sites. This is the moderately well-drained level up with the frangipane greater than 70 centimeters, fairly deep for our Grenada silt loam. This compared to the sloping upland that's had more erosion with the frangipane less than 50 centimeters. And you can see there are some yield differences. We are, though, as you notice, generally not responding much above 67 here. We are responding here somewhere between 67 and 134. A little more response to nitrogen on the moderately drained sloping upland that's more eroded. Our recommendation is still at 67 kilograms in per hectare, but it's subject to change as we get more information over time. The years were quite different. 2006 was an excellent year on these yields from the research plots on all the sites. You can see the difference across the locations. Again, the poorly drained floodplain being the lowest. But the statistics you notice are within a site, not across sites. 2007, I've been in Tennessee 32 years. 2007 was the hottest, driest year I had observed. I thought 1980 was going to be until I retired, but 2007 was worse. Yields dropped dramatically 2007. 2008 also wasn't a very, very good year for switchgrass, and it was very dry during some critical periods. Of 2009, it's been extremely wet, and probably the yields are going to come up to what they were in 2006. So we are seeing some of the typical fluctuations in yield after the establishment year, as reported by FIC and others. We are presently harvesting the switchgrass with large round bales. Initially, all the bales that were coming from our research plots each year and the big fields, the 32-acre fields, and the 100 acres in the West Tennessee research areas were going to Gadsden, Alabama, uneconomically, I might say, in terms of distance, to get co-fired in terms of research at Southern Company. That's how we were getting rid of our switchgrass from the fields. All of that was large round bales. Quickly became apparent that probably large square bales might be easier to transport on a flatbed semi-trailer trucks. Gadsden, Alabama could not at that time take square bales in terms of their grinding facility, so we stuck with round bales, but square bales probably are easier to handle in terms of putting them on a truck. these are the types of things we have to be concerned about. There's some excellent work going on in our department with biosystems engineers on other ways of transporting materials. It's been a major issue, obviously, with DOE and all the analyses in terms of the transport costs for a very long time. Have to deal with these same things you have to do with regular forage harvesting. We were particularly interested in dry matter loss, and of course we're clearly, as I just mentioned, interested in the ease of transportation to a biorefinery in terms of cost. We started a bale storage study in 2008. We're looking at round bales and rectangular bales of those sizes. Four cover situations: plastic tarp on top, no tarp outside, rep with plastic. I'm not going to show that data, preliminary data, and then the end barn, which was 500 days. Every 100 days, we were coming in, sampling three of the bales at each of these situations with three additional variables: well-drained ground, it's what they were stored on, gravel, or on pallets. So this was three bales with each combination of these treatments that were sampled as replications each time, and that's described on this next slide. We moved them every 100 days, five sampling periods. We weighed the bales, trying to get an estimate of dry matter loss, then we were taking a huge chainsaw and we're cutting the bales in half, and we're trying to evaluate weathered areas. It's been really a question for a number of years, or at least since I've got involved in this as a novice. What does a biorefinery, what are they going to need in terms of the procedure they're using to convert this to some product like ethanol? How much degradation can you have? How dry does it have to be, et cetera. So we're cutting each bale in two. This would be an initial bale before it's been cut. Here's after it would have been cut. We're looking at the inside of the bale. I'll cut again down the middle. We're trying to delineate procedure-wise all the different degradation areas. And then we're taking a hay auger. This is about 15 centimeters long, and we're sampling into each of the degradation areas to get a sample. And those are going to Idaho National Lab to be used for looking at conversion efficiency with the different types of measurements that would be involved, they think would be related to that. Again, depending on the process involved. We're then going into ArcPro and taking the photograph and getting a measurement of the volume of area for each of the degraded areas to eventually relate back to how much degradation occurred in the different bales with the different storage protocols. Weathered covered round bales, not much degradation. These were on the ground. There was a little degradation here, but pretty much no degradation for covered round bales. Clearly, we knew from the beginning round bales would shed water much more rapidly than square bales. The 500 days looks very similar to 400 days, so I'm just showing the four pictures here. Here's uncovered round bales. As you might expect, a little more degradation around the edge. Still not very much. Square bales, we expected to be to need covering, of course, much more than round bales. This is, again, bales that were on the ground, large square bales. Some degradation here. By 400 days, they had gotten enough water in the sides. Even being covered, they were degrading pretty rapidly. The next slide is uncovered square bales. Quite a problem, and we expected this, but we were a little bit surprised at how much degradation did occur. Some of these we had great difficulty even weighing and sampling, and had to sample just by hand samples. I'm going to show one quick brief slide of some of the data. Again, this is across the 500 days. Round bales, square bales, tarped, and untarped. And you can see the dramatic differences in dry matter loss. Of course, this would be a major issue. The pilot plant, I'm going to very briefly mention, is going in here. research pilot plant. We now have about 3,000 acres of switchgrass planted. We're going to be planting about 3,000 more. Part of this switchgrass is going to be going to the pilot biorefinery plant, which is a joint venture between Genera LLC, UT, and the Ponte-Nisco. It's a small research biorefinery, 250,000 gallons a year, but it's going to take some of this switchgrass and do the conversion. The switchgrass on these acres is being grown within the typical 50 to 60 mile radius of where Vondor is, where the pilot plant is going online, and that will be happening at the end of December. Time for one question.
There's no time for questions, but I'll allow just one.
Just quick, what's your cutting management?
Very good, and sorry I went over. We're cutting one time, hopefully after the first killing frost.
Thank you. Thank you, Don. Again, thank you, Don, for showing the variability with yields. Clearly, that's something that makes it difficult to model those yields across the nation and across large regions, and also looking at feedstock availability as impacted by decomposition or degradation of the feed.